Today's Daily DVR is, of course, brought to you by our presenting sponsor, Cufflinks.com, baby. Go to Cufflinks.com/DVR and get 20% off your order by using code DVR20. There's also a couple days left in February. You can use code OB30 and get 30% off Oxen Bull. Do it. Wearable art. It's amazing stuff. Go over to Cufflinks.com/DVR now. Enjoy the show. Today is Monday, February 25th, 2019, and this is Daily DVR. Welcome back, everyone, to Daily DVR. You can find us at DVRpodcast.com, on Twitter at DVRpodcast, and you can email us, DVRpodcast@gmail.com. My name is Axel. Thanks for joining me this Monday. I got a great show for you today. I had the opportunity to talk to Daniel Clark, who directed a great new film which just premiered, or I should say is now showing on Netflix. It's not a Netflix film. Daniel made this film with his crew, and then it is now showing on Netflix. Today we don't know, did Netflix make it? Did somebody else make it? But Daniel and his crew made this all on their own, as you'll find out. And it's a film called Behind the Curve, and it's about flat earthers. It's an interesting subject, and one that I talk about here in the interview. Initially, I was, kind of making fun of it. I thought it would be silly, flat earth. We've heard about this, Kyrie Irving, the earth is flat, it's not round. And people have ridiculed the flat earth movement, myself included. And I, even tweeted out, and then as I tweeted out, oh, I'm going to watch this flat earth documentary, should be hilarious. Start watching it. And I wanted to challenge myself by watching the film. And guess what? Challenge accepted. And Daniel and the crew won me over. This is a fantastic documentary. This is in so many ways about human beings, about belief, about connection, about community. This is a very objective film. And it is really about, like I said, about humans and people. And it was just a great experience watching it. And I felt a bunch of emotions. And I loved it. And I reached out to Daniel. And they got right back to me. And I was able to interview him and talk to him about the film. Again, it's called Behind the Curve. You can check it out at behindthecurvefilm.com. And you can watch it on Netflix. And I would suggest that you do. And I don't think there's really not any spoilers in this interview. I think you can listen to the interview and then watch the film. But you could do either. Watch it before or after. But I would say watch it. It's awesome. You're really going to enjoy it. And if you're a fan of documentaries that explore kind of the diversity of human beings and how our minds work, this is really one for you. It's very intelligent. And it's got a lot of heart. So here's my interview with Daniel. I want to thank him again for giving me that time, and I hope you all enjoy. And so I am here with the director of a fantastic documentary that just came onto Netflix. Everybody can watch it, called Behind the Curve. And this is director Daniel Clark. Now, for those of you that don't already know, because I think a lot of my listeners are into documentaries and stuff like this, Behind the Curve is a documentary about flat earthers. And I'll read a quick Film School Rejects blurb that I found on the Behind the Curve website that I think for me was just perfect. Behind the Curve presents a humanistic look at some of the most ridiculed people in America. It's certainly a fun and educational watch, perfect for those intellectually curious. And that's what I found. I was really blown away. And I want to thank you for coming on the show, Daniel. I really love the film. I love the heart and the intellect it displayed. And I have to say, man, I was really impressed with the choices you made. And I want to thank you for giving me the experience of watching your film. And thanks for coming on the show, brother.
That is very kind of you to say. I'm glad to be here. Appreciate it.
Well, I have to admit, when I first saw that this documentary was coming on Netflix, I tweeted out about it, and my first inclination was that to kind of ridicule it. I have to admit, I did it. And as I watched the film, I was so pleasantly surprised at the word I found myself was humanistic, and I like that this blurb used it as well, at how well you treated the subjects. And I was just, even as a science-based person, I was kind of ridiculing it. And I thought the film would potentially be over-serious, trying to convince me, right? Or conversely, I felt you might make fun of the subjects. But it was such a great approach, and I soaked right into it. Was that the idea going in, or how did this kind of idea of doing this film in general evolve? How did this come about?
Well, yeah, at first I want to address what you said, which is a lot of people, when they see that, and this is happening on Twitter nonstop, constantly, but it's like, people see that there's a movie about flat earthers on Netflix, and they assume that Netflix put out a documentary made by flat earthers. And that's, and then so there's a lot of ridicule with people not really watching it and kind of prejudging what it's about. And can't really fault anyone for that. But the movie, definitely when we even thought of this movie being made, we didn't want to make anything like what was already out there, which was a lot of news pieces just using puns and making fun of them and kind of having a conversation like, why would they think this when this is true? Like, a lot of the arguments that flat earthers have, we didn't feel like a movie was the platform to break down any arguments that they might have countered with any science arguments. We wanted to make it about the people in the movement and how people could believe something that almost everyone around them rejects. And, and they are the subject of ridicule, but they persist and they really just keep going. And it was interesting to us to use that as almost an analogy to a lot of other beliefs that people might have that are less extreme. And that was the approach to the movie, I think, from the get-go. And it's nice to know that some of that came through.
Oh, it totally came through. What is your background? Have you, I looked at your IMDb. It looks like you've been making films for a while. How did you start, and what's the road that led you to Behind the Curve personally?
Well, when I first moved to Los Angeles, I started working in documentaries. And I, built, whatever you say, built my chops, making it like doing sound and editing and shooting. And my production partners and I decided we wanted to make a film, and we were exploring different ideas and, this could be a movie, I guess. And then we came across Flat Earthers and we said, well, is there a movie about this? And we were really surprised to see that there wasn't. And so we jumped on it right away, and that's how it happened. We just called out the main guy, Mark Sargent, who's kind of, I would say, the most featured in our film. And his address and phone number are very public, and we contacted him, and he got back to us, and we went up to film, and that was basically it.
That is amazing, man, because, I taught documentary filmmaking for about 15 years in Manhattan in high school, and then at public access stations, actually right down the road from where Flat Earth Con was in Durham. So right down the road from Raleigh. And I would often talk to students about framing their short documentaries around kind of certain documentary tent poles, right? So an event, a person,
right.
And when I started watching this film as a filmmaker myself, you all must have just been so giddy at what you got because I listed them. You have an interesting, contentious subject that involves a niche group. You have a great star that allows us entry into this world with both Mark and Patricia. You have a controversy within their own ranks. And to top it all off, you have an event, the Flat Earth Conference, that ties all of these things together and also, in a meta way, involves your own documentary that you're making. So this is like, in so many ways, as a filmmaker myself and as a lover of documentaries, I was like, wow, that's one of the reasons why I wanted to talk to you, because I was like, this doc is like pure gold, man. Like everything that I look for when I'm starting to watch a doc, and you must do the same thing as a filmmaker, you know what, within the first 5 minutes, you can kind of tell what decisions they're making, you know? And in this, though, I couldn't. You really, did this all happen for you? Or how much of it was happy accidents, and how much did you, was this pre-production and kind of a plan? How much was editing? Kind of tell me how all of those stars align to make this film.
Right. The first thing was when we started researching, one of the first conversations we had is like, okay, what happens in the movie? So, you know, what isn't, and we were looking for some, and I think I threw out, maybe there's some kind of conference. And then we looked it up, and it was the first ever international Flat Earth conference. So yeah, to say the stars aligned is pretty accurate, because then we contacted Mark, and he couldn't have been better on camera. There's a very high chance that he, you know, could have been a little shy to us or awkward, and he's not at all. He's very much open to talking, and he's not contentious. He's very just happy, and then his mother was willing to talk to me and let me in, and that kind of opened the door to other Flat Earthers, because they said, oh, if you're talking to Mark, I guess you're okay. Mm-hmm. And he vouched for us. And so we got all that. And yeah, as stuff unfolded, it was kind of unreal how, the little love story, the infighting.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I forgot about the love story. It seems within each thing, you could have made a whole nother three or four docs.
Right. And I was really prepared for them to dismiss it. For Mark and Patricia to say, oh, you know, that's nothing. But they were both very, very open about it. And I found that very refreshing.
Yeah. It's almost as if, it's hard to say. It's almost as if the subject matter itself kind of lended these people towards overexposing themselves. You know what I mean? In order to believe such a thing, that the earth is flat, you have to present yourself as being so transparent. Like, I'm the one with the truth, right? So it's almost as if they forced that type of ideology upon themselves in their interactions with other people. That's the impression that I got. Because I'm trying to figure out how you convince them to even be in the movie. But it seems to me that they were more than willing to have the cameras around and have you all around.
Right. With a few exceptions, that's basically true. They were happy that, and they've talked to a lot of news crews before, so it didn't seem to us like it was going to be a big hurdle to get them to talk to us. But yeah, everybody was very generous with their time and let me come in. And some people had restrictions, like, please don't film me outside of my house, you know, please don't film my kid. And I was like, fine, no problem. So, you know, with those usual caveats, which is not necessarily unique to Flat Earth, it was pretty welcoming. I mean, there are definitely people who didn't talk to us or who were a little hesitant at first until we got further in and we were with these people for a few months, that other people opened up and actually were willing to talk to us. But yeah, generally, a lot of open arms. And yeah, I think the big thing is that most of the people we followed in the film have YouTube channels, so they're already public, and they're not necessarily afraid of exposing themselves or, you know, being found out as Flat Earthers. And they would like another platform aside from YouTube, and they found, you know, they talked to a lot of journalists, and they were happy to talk to us as part of it.
Now, one thing that I considered, did you at any time during the filming, or even in your pre-production, your planning, did you worry at all about becoming involved with kind of this genre, subgenre? I mean, this whole conspiracy about Flat Earth. With everything that's going on in the world today, with our present government, with the ideas of fake news and truth being questioned, sometimes rightfully so, sometimes not, there could be a fear of getting involved with this, that it might be dangerous to you, that, you know, I don't know, someone might, you know, hack your computer to get information. Or it just seems to me, when you enter into this these days, this is not fringe anymore. It's kind of become these kind of ideas and this kind of world has become a little bit a part of our everyday. And it's something that has shaken a lot of people. And when you're going to invest so much of your time and your career, right, and your creative energy into something, did that worry you?
It was definitely a consideration. I don't know if I was ever necessarily worried, because the film's intent really from the get-go was to shine a little light on why conspiracy theories and this kind of like group thinking, despite evidence to the contrary, exists, and how the communities work together. So, I mean, we definitely wanted to dive in there. I don't think, you know, we've taken some precautions here and there, and we definitely didn't just go wherever anybody told us. We definitely vetted what was happening, but at no point did we ever feel threatened or anything like that. And I don't think, I think Flat Earth is kind of the safest conspiracy you could follow, because most of the people are very nice and very happy. And it's kind of interesting to see, because you see a lot of darker conspiracies out there. And it's a lot harder to deal with, you know, as a filmmaker coming from that, you know, it'd be a lot harder to hear someone, you know, denying a major tragedy or anything like that. It's tough to be with those people that spend a lot of time. But with Flat Earth, it's kind of this different energy. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these people do also believe in other conspiracies, but their main talking point is about Flat Earth. And in that way, you know, it's, I think, more manageable for at least me to deal with.
Yeah, yeah, I could see that. And I have to say that while I was watching the film, especially towards the end, when there is the controversy at the convention, right, about people wanting their money back, and you have another another gentleman who is involved. What's his name? Math
Powerland? Yes.
Math. Okay. I wanted to make sure it was actually Math. That kind of makes sense for Flat Earth. If you want people to believe that you know things, you might as well just name yourself Math, right? Right. It's like, it's kind of basic, right? It's kind of foundational. But that, you know, when that was happening, that was the first time that really brought that to light. Because for me, having been a person who, you know, I've been podcasting for 10 years and been on Twitter, and, you know, you see the way the internet has kind of devolved in many ways. And there is a potential for things, it could consume your life in a way that you've seen it consume them. Like, it's almost like touching madness in a sense.
Very interesting perspective. Gosh, I hadn't thought about it that way. At the conference, yeah, like that was actually the only time I think that that real, I mean, obviously it was a big conference of people, and there were a lot of security concerns. So, you know, everybody was briefed on what, because there was a security team in place, and everybody was briefed on what to do in case of different activities or any kind of incident. So there definitely was that fear, but, you know, it didn't feel necessarily present and lurking over our heads at any point.
That's good. That's good. Because you never know. I mean, and my impression from watching the film was that the people that you interviewed did seem very interesting people. You know, they didn't seem to take it over the edge. And but you just never know. And I think that that's something that your film touched upon. And I wonder if you see this, you know, oftentimes as a, I mean, are you a documentary fan as well as a filmmaker?
Yes, yes.
Okay, so you notice that sometimes documentary films kind of come out in bunches, and as a kind of, you know, film Twitter or film culture kind of tends to view them in the same lens. And when I was thinking about that, I was thinking about these recent Fyre Festival documentaries that came out. And I was thinking about your documentary. I was thinking about a couple of smaller docs that I've seen recently that deal with kind of millennial culture or conspiracy culture or these niche cultures that propagate on the interwebs. Mm-hmm. Do you see when you look at your film, how do you see it within the context of those ideas and also the larger ideas that I spoke of earlier with, you know, our present government and fake news and the questioning of what is reality? Because the thing I liked about your doc is you could have went there, but in a way you left that as a question for the audience, I felt. Was that purposeful?
In a way, I mean, conspiracy theories aren't new,
right?
Obviously. And you know, we've talked to a lot of psychologists and people who are studying this far deeper than we ever have. And the basic thing that we wanted to get across was that, you know, our first assumption was that YouTube was responsible for this. And I think there's some truth to that, right? Because mm-hmm. YouTube has kind of just changed their algorithms. But the internet is definitely a culture where you can find people who agree with you and where any theory can be backed up by a video that's maybe a little fuzzy and unclear. And we wanted to address that, but not necessarily in a very direct way. We wanted, you know, a little more inward looking from our audiences, hopefully. There are some rabbit holes we could have gone down with conspiracy right. theories and fake news. And we felt that just touching on them was a bit more satisfying than trying mm-hmm. to like solve it, quote unquote, which would have been impossible.
Yes. And it's a great choice that you made because it kept you on point. All right. I want to take a quick break here from my interview with Daniel just to remind you to go to cufflinks.com/DVR, use code DVR20, get 20% off your order. There's some amazing stuff. And you know what? The Oscars were yesterday and we have a winner. So check us out at DVR Podcast on Twitter or Daily DVR on Facebook. Find out who won our Oscars contest. And I'm going to be back later this week, probably on Friday, with He's Solo to go over the Oscars, kind of talk about it a little bit. We've also got our finale of True Detective coming up on Wednesday. So check that out. And don't forget to go to DVRpodcast.com. And most importantly, go to cufflinks.com, baby. Use code DVR20. There's so much awesome stuff. Gave away a Black Panther tie and a Hand of the Queen pin. All right? That was just for the Oscars. We got way more stuff coming up that we're going to give away from cufflinks.com. So thank you, cufflinks.com. Now back to the show. What was your team in making this film? How did you make it, and what were who was the team that kind of made those decisions that you worked with? Because like I said, as a filmmaker myself, I know that these are questions you make when you sit down. How much of it was pre-production, production? You know, I know oftentimes when we talk about film, we talk about it's really three different things, right? What you plan, what you shoot, what you edit. Mm-hmm. And they can be three totally separate things. So maybe talk a little bit about the team and the process of how that worked out for you.
Sure. We have a very small team. We're Delta V Productions, and it's Caroline Clark, myself, and Nick Andert. We were all producers on the movie. Nick was also the editor. We'd all worked together on other projects before, and so we had a working relationship. And when we decided to break off and do our own thing and not, you know, work for some other company, it was great because we all had very similar sensibilities and we would check each other when necessary. And we talked a lot about what the movie should be. And every time we went out for a shoot, which could have just been me or could have been Caroline and myself, it would have been, you know, we kind of go in there with an idea of maybe things we want to touch on. Like, we need to get some update about the conference. Like, what's happening with that? Or, you know, let's check in with Mark's mom and see how she's doing. But then when we get there, you know, right, what you plan is could be very different than what you shoot. So, you know, if they don't want to talk about the conference or something else happened when we got there, then we're going to film that. And then what we edited was the movie. But Nick and I have worked together as editors for a long time. So we were co-editing a couple projects together. So I know his sensibilities, mm-hmm. and it's really great because I'm out there filming and directing the shoot. And I know that if I get a shot of A and a shot of B, I know he's going to go through that footage, find it, and put it together. So we have a really good relationship that way.
That's
and awesome. We're also friends.
Yeah, that helps, right? That I mean that type of partnership helps. So that so you shot it. You were behind the camera. Did you have a camera person, sound person? What was the actual crew on the ground?
Luckily, in my years of documentary filmmaking, I have, you know, I started doing sound when I was in college. I did a lot of sound production, and then I can hold a camera fine. And I found it was a lot nicer and easier and less expensive to go out and film it myself. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times it was just me and a camera and some sound equipment, and that was the crew.
Nice.
It was just one person. So I think that was also nicer to get in and let people, you know, get to know me.
Yeah.
Because there wasn't this, you know, four-person crew with a PA running around on a documentary set, which I know there's a place for that, but I haven't found that to be a really great way to get someone's trust and get really intimate with anybody.
Oh, you know what, man? I can't agree with you more. And it shows. I mean, this is why I'm asking, right? Because as I'm watching it, I'm saying to myself, man, the ease that not just at first it was just Mark, right? And then I said to myself, but this guy, this is who he is, you know? And then as everyone appeared in front of the camera, there was such an ease and I felt that. And I think that that's an important thing. Wow. That's a great decision that you made, man. And that just goes to show you sometimes people, you have no idea what's going on behind the scenes, you know, some docs, you watch them and there literally is like a 10 person crew there, you know? And then when they show a still and I'm like, why are there 10 people there? You know? And then there's one person and that's been my experience. One or two or three people, especially for a documentary, you know, but you just don't know. That's really cool. So were you shooting editing or were you let's shoot all this and then edit this part? Because segmentation is so important to film and especially documentary. Documentaries, in a sense, you know, I've often seen it or explained it as like a term paper, right? You have your introduction, your body, your conclusion, and you have to build that, right? You're presenting something here. It's, you know, that's kind of deconstructing the way that film and TV is made is kind of what I do on the podcast and in general, just because people mystify it so much. And it's like building a house. You need to segment things. You can only do things. But how did you segment out the actual making of this film?
We would shoot it and then come back and edit the scenes together. And they weren't necessarily, you know, like we didn't think at first, this needs to go at the beginning and this needs to go here. That kind of happened from what the scene was doing on its own. So we would cut together, you know, a longer version of the scene. And then I'd go back out and shoot something else. It wouldn't be related necessarily. Or, you know, what's nice about doing that is, you know, like, hey, this wasn't clear in the last thing. Like, this didn't make a lot of sense. So maybe let's ask him this again and, you know, get the context around it differently. And so that would happen. And yeah, I think editing as you go can be a bit of a double-edged sword because sometimes you can, you know, I think when you shoot it all and then try to edit it, you might be stuck in a situation where there's like an overabundance of places you could possibly go.
Yes.
But as you film, you actually know what you have and what you don't have. And there's a lot more, I think there's even more freedom in that because you can say, like, and that's one of the things we did when we filmed Mark. We came back and edited a scene together. The scene actually never made it into the movie. It was just Mark walking around his town telling us about it. But he was so compelling and jumped off the screen that we knew that we had a film that we, if we continued to do this, we would, you know, have a good story on our hands because Mark is a very charismatic person to be in a documentary.
Oh, dude.
And it's tough to find that. And we were very lucky to meet Mark.
Oh, I mean, you could, you know, have you seen the Somme films? about the sommeliers, the wine films.
I have not, unfortunately.
That's an interesting guy. I want to chat with him too, because he basically found some people and then he was just like, man, I'm going to make like 4 docs out of this. And he kind of came back and followed, you know, he really got into it. And I just thought that way about Mark is like, this guy is like, for a documentary filmmaker, so he's like a gold mine. You know what I mean? He's like the kind of person you look your whole life to find, you know? And he really was fantastic. And the thing was the love story, the way he was willing to be open and emotional, sit there with his mom. His mom was amazing. You know, that
his mom is one of the nicest people.
So great. And they really seem that way. That's a thing too that I had a good feeling about this film, because there was a time when the world of conspiracy was more fun. You know, man, back in the 80s and the 90s and the 70s, there was a little bit of people had, you could kind of be into it and it didn't have to go in a certain direction where it seems to go these days. And I just felt that there was a certain, you kept a certain lightness to it and a certain humanness, you know, a vulnerability that I thought was just really beautiful. And I keep on coming back to it. And that's why I was so excited about that. Let me ask you just a couple of kind of straight up production questions. How much do you think you shot compared to how much is actually the film? Because the film's, how long is the film again? What's the running time?
The movie is 95 minutes.
Which is I love any from not, for me, 85 to 95 is like what pretty much all films should be. But then I'm not like the Russo brothers where, you know, they want to make these comic book movies like 4 hours long. But so how much do you think you shot as compared to in the film? Because I think that's interesting for people to hear how much you actually put into as opposed to what is there at the end.
I think total production days, it might have been around 30 production days where we actually were rolling the camera. We didn't always film the whole day, obviously. That's too much. But yeah, I think that's about right. And hours-wise, oh, I have no idea. It was enough.
If it was 30 days, you shot at least 4 or 5 hours a day, right?
That's about right.
So if you think about that, so that's what, like 100, that's a lot.
Yeah.
So it just goes to show you, I think it's interesting that people should hear about that, because that's a thing that for documentaries especially, I had the opportunity to work with Albert Maysles. And I did some commercial work for him and I hung out at Maysles Films in New York. And he once took me into the room where they kept all of the stock for Grey Gardens. And it was a room.
Wow.
It was an entire room. So it's a lot. Documentaries are, you really get to know the people and the subject. What were some of the things, some of the ways or some of the, scenes or whatnot that you wanted to include in the film, but didn't? And what were some of those decisions? If maybe you can think of one or two things that maybe you or your editor were holding on to, but then said, you know what, this just doesn't fit.
There were a few smaller meetups that we had filmed. So, you know, the Flat Earthers would get together. It was a smaller version of a conference where they just get together and have dinner and talk about conspiracies. And there was one in particular that was really interesting. It just, when we had it in the film, you know, up until we were starting to go to festivals, and we just said, like, the movie's a little too long, and every time we get to the scene, it feels like we don't need it. As much as we love it, we have to get rid of it. And we also had a little more with our scientists, kind of explaining some other, you know, psychological findings that maybe they have, or explaining the scientific process a little differently. That when it came time to the movie, it wasn't necessarily directly addressing what was happening in the film. So we just decided, okay, this is a hard decision to make, but we can't have, you know, a 2-hour movie.
Yeah.
So let's cut it down. And so, you know, there are things that I really like, and I love like extended versions of scenes that actually are in the film. But, you know, as far as conveying the information we want to convey and keeping the story concise and palatable, you know, you have to make those calls.
Yeah, definitely. And those are, you know, one of the things about documentaries too, I'm sure, is there's probably like six other docs within the footage that you have. Do you think about that? I mean, in today's day and age where, especially with marketing and the web, podcasting, YouTube, did that become part of idea of marketing at all? Taking certain footage or making little shorts or doing anything with that extra footage? Because I always am a person where like I kind of want to do something with that footage. Like I want people to see it. Or are you just, right. Are you okay with, no, this is the film we made and that other 150 hours is just going to, that's where it doesn't exist there.
Yeah, I'm going to say, I wouldn't say that there's another movie within our movie. I think the movie we told is pretty much the story. I think that's really creative and I like that idea of, you know, shorts from the film that aren't in the movie. It's really interesting to see. But as far as we go, you know, we the story is pretty clear, and I think a lot of news organizations have covered Flat Earth, and a lot of the same elements emerge. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, some of the people in the film have apparently talking points that they repeat now. So you see a lot of the similar lines coming through on news stories.
Oh, that's interesting.
It was surprising when we saw a few.
Mean that they do you feel as though they were kind of, in a sense, taking ownership of their appearance in the doc by like branding themselves by what they said in it?
I think it's actually more just they've repeated this so many times to people, and it's kind of, I could do a lot of interviews, and I guess I think I also tell a lot of the same stories.
Ah, yes.
Depending on, or if like Q&As, you know, people ask, like, how did you get together? In one hand, it makes perfect sense that they would repeat the stories, but on the other hand, it was some of them were exactly the same. And, you know, it happens.
That's really interesting. That's very interesting. So how has the, you made the film, and mm-hmm. once you were locked and done, were you making this on your own and then you took it out to festivals? Did you have investors that were helping you along the way? Was this kind of thing where you just said, hey, look, we're going to make something? Or did you already have a mode of distribution or festival or connections or something? What was your idea to get it out there?
We just decided to make it. So at first, you know, it was just, I had a camera and I had the sound gear and we just bought a plane ticket and a hotel room and went.
Nice.
And that pretty much was how the whole shoot went. It kept getting a little more expensive. But yeah, we were shopping it to festivals. So we didn't have any kind of distribution prior to that. And then we were able to get into Hot Docs and we premiered in Toronto there. And yeah, that was great. And then we had a sales representative come on, and that's why the movie's on Netflix.
And how has it been since? Because this must be, you know, I mean, even when I sent you an email and said, hey, do you want to come on the pod? I felt as though I had to kind of say, like, I'm not connected to Flat Earth. I actually want to talk about this as a film. How have you seen now? I mean, it's only been on Netflix for like, what, a week or so? I think it came, right?
Yeah, on the 15th.
Okay, so 8 days. And I think it's probably doing pretty well, man. I mean, I just know in my community, little community, and I look on the Twitter and whatnot, and social media, I see it, and I see it kind of featured a bit on Netflix. So right. I think it seems to be doing pretty well, and it hits a good subject. What's been your experience?
Yeah, we think it's doing well, too. It's a little hard to tell because Netflix... Yeah. Everybody's account is very personalized, but we've had a few times where we've seen it on like 3 trending lists and people are tweeting about it and people are talking about it and very curious as to what it's about, which is why at the top of this interview, I mentioned that it's not by Flat Earthers about it doesn't argue flat earth theory. It's just about this community. Mm-hmm. And I think even this subject alone has just gotten a lot of people curious, and we're very pleased with how it's being received. And hopefully people watch it and take away something a little deeper than that flat earth exists, you know?
Well, I mean, I think they definitely will. It's really fantastic. What's next for you? What are you planning on doing next? Do you have any ideas? Do you want to continue at all? Are you going to be like the conspiracy doc guy now? Or? what are they trying to get you to make, or what do you want to make?
That's something that interests all of us at the production company, is doing stories that are a little deeper than what is on the surface. So, and not really sensationalizing, but rather having a much more heartful approach. And empathy is really big with us, so we're trying to do a few projects now that I don't know if I'm supposed to talk about, but you know, we're trying to come at things from a slightly different angle than the sensational, or you know, just the headlines or a murder mystery kind of thing.
Yeah, no, I think that is something that's very necessary these days. And myself, I am big on empathy, my brother. Big on empathy. I think it's something that we all need to do. And that's really, like I said, that's why I wanted to talk to you. And that's why I appreciate you coming on today, because this documentary, I'm attracted to strange subjects, you know? And the reason why is because it illuminates the individual humanity within us all. And even someone who has an idea that seems outlandish or crazy, the thing that is beautiful is their belief in it, right? Mm-hmm. And their belief in themselves. And also, what was a big part of this doc that I took away from it was your respect for and empathy for the community. The way that when they opened up the Flat Earth Convention, though as a man of science, I am utterly like dismayed that there's so many people would believe this, and it's a bit scary to me. I did feel I could feel their pride in being together. Mm-hmm. You know, and you really portrayed that very well.
Oh, thank you. I think, you know, what's really interesting is it's very easy to cast people as others, like different than you. Mm-hmm. And meeting these people and giving the portrayal that we did in the film, hopefully people walk away with like, okay, they believe something I don't, but you know what? They do have friends, and they do have to go shopping and eat dinner.
Yep.
Like everybody has their own things. And I'm sure you have some things that you believe that maybe it's superstition, maybe it's a birthday wish, I don't know, but things that aren't really grounded in any kind of scientific fact or backup data, but they're important to you maybe. And you hold on to them. And I think that's very true of flat earthers too. It's much different degree, but it's very easy to cast someone out as other than you until you meet them. And then all of a sudden they're a person, living, breathing human. And now I think you care a little more.
Yeah, definitely.
And that's what the movie's trying to do.
Well, I think you accomplished it, man. And I really do appreciate the time that you've given me today. Is there anything else that you wanted to touch upon or say or anything like that before we go?
Oh, gosh. I never have anything prepared for this question. I would say if you have any doubts about the film, I suggest you watch it. Because a lot of people like have been tweeting at Netflix saying, like, how dare Netflix put this on? And I think give it a chance. If you don't like the movie, you don't like the movie. That's fair. But just don't judge the movie based on the trailer that you saw or the picture that's in the image. Take a watch. Like it or don't like it.
Oh, definitely.
Don't judge something before you don't know anything about it.
Oh, and in this case, you know, in this case, as nothing more than a fan and a viewer and a guy who saw it on the Just Watch app and then watched it on Netflix, it is everything the opposite of that. It is in many ways, it's a very scientific film.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, in many ways, it's very scientific because it uses the basic principles of science to examine something as it is. And you did a great job of not interjecting yourselves or opinions or trying to get the audience to think a certain way and just showing what this is, what this world is and who these people are in a very objective way. And I would think anybody tweeting or saying that just needs to watch the first 5 minutes of your film to see that. So,
sure.
You know, but that is something we got to deal with today. But hey, hopefully maybe this interview will help them out too. I'll tweet at them and I'll say, hey, before you do that, take 40 minutes and listen to Daniel talk.
Great.
All right, man. Well, thank you so much for your time. I really do appreciate it.
Thank you. I really had fun.
So that was my interview with Behind the Curve director Daniel Clark. I want to thank Daniel for taking the time to talk to me. That was a great interview. I appreciate his insights. And I really do appreciate the film, and everyone should go check it out because it achieves its goals. It's a fantastic film. It's a great doc, and I'm always happy when I have the opportunity to experience something like that and also to share Daniel's kind of behind the scenes stuff with you all. And that's all it takes, people. An idea, a camera, hard work, and you do it. And that's what he did. And he made a great movie. So go Daniel and the whole crew over there. Much appreciated. Check that out on Netflix, Behind the Curve. And I can't wait to see what film Daniel directs next. Maybe we'll have him on to talk about it. Who knows? So check us out on Wednesday. We will be doing our True Detective finale, me and Heath solo. That's going to be exciting. I just did a great podcast with Justin where we had some awesome feedback from Howard. That was great. And then hopefully this Friday, I'll be diving into the Oscars. Let it ruminate a little bit. You know, we don't need the hot take. So let's see the Oscars a couple days out. We'll go over it and we'll see who won our Oscars pool. Who won? You already know if you check out our Twitter or our Facebook. I'll let you find out there. But thanks again to Daniel, and thank you all for listening. I'll talk to you again soon on Daily DVR. Check us out, dvrpodcast.com. Peace!